You're tuned to The Weekend, a public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on The Weekend today are Sandra Olivas and Sonia Lopez. They are with a mother's baby unit at Providence. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that unit is and what they're here to talk about in just a minute. But first of all, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you very much for inviting us. We're
thank
definitely
you. Yes, thank
excited.
You so much.
So ladies, tell us, what is the mother baby unit at Providence?
So this is Sonia, and I'm from East Campus. We have a mother baby unit there where we make sure that mom and baby are never separated. And so previously, mom used to have her baby. Baby would deliver and get transported off to the nursery to transition there. And so we've created a unit where mom doesn't leave baby and baby doesn't leave mom. So together they are continuously there throughout the entire process.
So is this something that is new to El Paso?
Yes.
Well, I think the idea is not new. Obviously, we would always, I mean, through centuries of having babies, we know that mom and baby should stay together. I think for a few years there in the 60s and 70s, we saw that the birth of the nursery where, you know, mom and baby were separated. And now we really want to get back to keeping the baby and the mom together the whole time. It promotes family bonding. It promotes breastfeeding. It allows for mom to pick up on cues of when baby needs something. It allows for baby regulating its temperature a little bit better. I mean, all sorts of benefits for keeping mom and baby together. And that's
well, tell us some of the important things that, because again, people might not be familiar with what all goes on when a mother gives birth and after the baby is, you know, put in the nursery or with mom. But you all as nurses recognize the fact that you need to take care of certain things that may come up, not always, you know, because we always people tend to read the things on the medicine and what may happen and they freak out. And there are a lot of things that may happen. That doesn't mean they're going to happen, but you all are there to make sure that mother and baby are taken care of.
Exactly. Once a baby is born, the first thing that happens and in standard is that a baby gets a really fast assessment. And immediately there, you can usually pick up on something that's going wrong. If everything goes well, mom and baby stay together. All healthy babies should stay with their mom at the bedside. Like I said, it has all those benefits that we mentioned a little bit ago. And if baby needs a little extra help transitioning, well, we can deal with that immediately, too, because of that immediate assessment that baby gets on birth.
Now, we're one of the things that you all have been recognized for, and that's something called the IAC, which is the Immunization Action Coalition. But you all have been admitted into the honor roll of that. And so if you wouldn't mind first sharing with us what IAC is, and then talk about this honor roll.
So the coalition is actually a group that recognizes hospitals for having a higher than 90th percentile on immunization rates for any of your newborns. And so the hospitals of Providence, which is all three campuses, Memorial, Sarah, and East Campus, recently got recognized. We all had percentages above 99% for this honor roll, and that just means that in the last year we immunized, again, more than 99% of our babies. And so that covers a 12-month period. We were recognized. We were, if I'm not mistaken, hospitals 19, 20, and 21, and there are currently 36 hospitals in Texas that are recognized for the hepatitis B honor roll. So we're definitely very thankful and feel privileged to have received the recognition.
Now, when people think of hepatitis and hepatitis B, you know, people don't associate that with babies. They think about it as, you know, as someone gets older and people who have donated blood or attempted to donate blood, they know that, you know, that's one of the questions they ask, have you ever had hepatitis? But people just think of hepatitis, period. They don't think about hepatitis C, B. So if you wouldn't mind explaining to us what this is all about.
Well, the vaccine, hepatitis B, it affects your liver, and can attack that liver, destroy it, and eventually cause a lot of damage and eventually maybe even death. And since babies have no immunity at birth, it's really important for them not to get these diseases from other people. It's not that they're going to be, you know, getting transfusions or, you know, most of the time they're healthy newborns. We're giving them their vaccine because we're putting them out into the community where other people may have it and they may be exposed.
And this immunization that you're talking about, is this given to newborns specifically, or is this something that comes later as part of those shots that they're to get?
So definitely it's something that we want to give right after birth. There's a series of three. It doesn't mean that you can't get it later. For example, if a teen was not immunized at birth, this is something that you do want to receive. But the education is so important for those parents to know that you want to protect your children right after birth. Again, it's something that is a virus that can exist, and they're easily, again, not protected because they don't have that immunity. So you do want to give them that immunization within the 24 hours of birth, if not even sooner. So it's important to educate our parents about hepatitis.
So tell us a little bit about the education that you have for parents.
We immediately want to let them know what hepatitis B is. Many a times we have, you know, parents who don't know what it is. And again, to Sandra's point, it's the that infection that affects the liver. So we need to educate them again that they want to be protected. They want to protect their children. They want to protect anyone at home potentially who has a decreased immune system as well. And so, again, just the overall protection of what the hepatitis.
And so you, sometimes these babies, when they get home, they have, you know, other siblings who are there, and those siblings might also be children, little children. Is there anything that they need to do?
We have found, I think, that most of the time when we give vaccines to a baby and they have older siblings, that usually within that family they've all had received their vaccine. So it's not as worrisome, but those kids do go into school systems where other kids maybe from other families maybe don't believe in vaccines or have maybe misinterpreted information or data that they've read maybe on the internet or wherever about vaccines. And so it's really important that they get facts. Most of the pediatricians, well, I would have to say all of the pediatricians that we work with recommend the vaccine on birth. And so it's really important to get facts from a provider or from a healthcare professional that really knows, instead of maybe, you know, if you have concerns about a vaccine or about anything that you're going to give your baby, to ask the right person.
So what are some of the main concerns that you have received from either parents or family members? Because as Sandra mentioned, there are some families who may or may not believe in vaccinations.
I agree. I mean, I think that's definitely a great question, because I find that most of our parents don't want to give the immunization after birth because they feel the schedule or how soon after it is too soon for the patients, or the babies, I should say, the newborns. But you have to remember that, I mean, the logistics and the thoughts and the science behind this has been studied for a long time. And so there's no true error or harm in giving it afterwards. On the contrary, it's indicated specifically for that immunization. So I feel like parents often think it's not a good idea to give afterwards, but it's the contrary. It is. And that's the education that we want to give, that you want to protect versus hold off and have that potential of getting that hepatitis if you don't immunize.
Are these classes or education informative sessions that are available to the mother while she's still pregnant?
Well, we do have prenatal classes that we give at both of the campuses. And definitely we do have a pediatrician question answer session where they, if they have any of these type of questions that comes up, We encourage questions from the parents in advance. Many of our parents don't go to prenatal classes. And in those cases, we do a lot of education at the bedside.
People might wonder, well, is hepatitis B a big threat in El Paso? We mentioned we've heard about hepatitis, and people read about it all the time, watch the news. And especially with social media, it's so available that everybody can find out about all these issues and diseases and things. But there may be that one parent who might say, well, you know, why does the baby need it, or is there a concern? So I guess my question is, why did the hospitals of Providence decide to start doing this?
I think we've been just doing it for years and years and years because it really has been recommended for a very, very long time. We didn't just start doing it. This is just standard practice. I think the honor roll just, you know, happened to be so that, yeah,
okay.
It's an educational thing that that came up, and, you know, we thought, well, we do this. We do this. This is standard practice for us. And so we went ahead and applied. Parents do wonder why we have to give it, you know, since we don't hear of huge outbreaks. But, you know, things do happen, as we heard in California with the measles when that came out. There are clusters of kids that are not immunized. And when one gets it, then many can get it. And so we want to make sure that that they all have that protection.
According to the information that we received about you all being admitted into the honor roll, that you've since, I guess, the beginning of the year, you all have been given these immunizations to 100% of the babies. Is that correct, or is that something that, I mean, it's pretty high?
It's high. I don't know about 100%. I don't remember having any refusals this year. It looks like we are, I think at Memorial, 97%. Sierra is 100% right now, and East is 99%.
So it's pretty high.
It is pretty high for all three facilities. For the honor roll, you know, anybody above 90% is really doing really well. And so we're all three of us up there, and we're proud of that. Anytime we don't have one, we always try to make sure that the parents understand first. And maybe it's not because if it's a miscommunication, or maybe it's something that they don't understand before they refuse. And most of the time, they agree. We do have a few parents that don't want that, and that's okay. We have to respect their wishes.
It's obvious that you all are very busy working with the babies and the mothers. And Sonia, I've just, you know, and when you first walked in and reading your tag says you are with Mothers Services, Women's Services. If you could kind of fill us in on what that involves.
So Women's Services really is just a matter of every woman and baby, anything that has to do with mom in labor and or potentially surgical procedures. So if you were to walk in into any facility, you would be greeted, and if you were in labor, get admitted to the labor and delivery unit and get a full assessment, make sure mom and baby are doing well. Again, we're promoting the couple of care, the bonding mother and baby. So again, baby would stay with you after baby was born. Make sure that everything is going well, and you get transferred over to what we would call our mother-baby unit / what used to be postpartum. And then, again, the care would continue there. Mom and baby would be taken care of. So now we have what we call a transition nursery. So it's just that nurse is going out, and not necessarily is baby coming in to stay in a unit, but staying with mom. And so Women's Services also encompasses the NICU, which is the neonatal intensive care. We're going to be taking care of all of our critical care babies there.
Sandra mentioned a little bit about, you know, the fact that a baby does not have an immune system when they're born. And you mentioned about, you know, babies who need to be in the ICU or you know, for some reason need that special care. And a lot of times, you know, we hear parents saying, well, you know, do you want boy or girl? It doesn't matter as long as they're healthy. But sometimes we have that baby who is, for lack of a better word, defenseless, and that's where you all come in and help them out. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us, Sandra, perhaps, you know, you don't have to be specific about any one baby, but if you can just share with us some of the, you know, things that you all work with.
Sure. Yeah, most of the time we're able to identify, thank goodness, that we're able to identify the baby before babies are born if they're going to need some special care. If, for example, a mom comes in early and it's just too soon to have this baby, the baby's a little early, immediately we can identify that, notify the practitioners in the neonatal intensive care, the nursery staff in the intensive care, and then have them present at delivery. So specialized care comes for them immediately on birth. And so they're taken care of with that special care from the get-go. Quick assessment and transfer into the neonatal intensive care so that they can begin their treatment right away.
I think we're very fortunate in that we don't see babies needing any of the, you know, diseases with the hepatitis. I think, again, our percentages for immunization prove that you're not going to see a prevalence of the hepatitis. Again, in El Paso mostly, it's mostly outside, you know, outside of the United States. But what you see most often is going to be potentially just children who with a little bit of respiratory issues or potentially some sign of infection. And so, again, those are the ones, you know, to Sandra's point, that are identified and then quickly taken care of.
We recently did an interview with a nurse and a doctor about the benefits of breastfeeding and nursing. And that is something that, you know, I'm sure that as a director of Women's Services that you find that a lot of people might have questions about that or are already informed, and that's what they want to do.
Oh, we are promoting breastfeeding tremendously. I think that there you cannot get enough of the education on the breastfeeding. In El Paso specifically, we want to definitely promote breastfeeding. We definitely want to start with, you know, the education in the community. You, of course, your OB offices as well as while you're in the hospital. But we feel like as if you can get a good established support system, you know, at home as well as through, again, your community and your physician, it just promotes those breastfeeding opportunities and increases rates. And what we've seen and how we've seen babies just excel, or not excel, but maybe just be better health-wise.
Like flourish, yeah.
Mm-hmm, flourish when they're breastfeeding and the immunity that you get when you are breastfeeding, it's amazing. We've seen some very, very wonderful cases after breastfeeding.
What are some of the issues that you all bring up? Because you mentioned prenatal care, and a lot of times I know when you know, we had our children, there was prenatal classes and Lamaze classes, all that. Tell us about, you know, some of the information that you all provide as prenatal information.
We have breastfeeding classes, both English and Spanish, where we talk about not only anatomy, but all the benefits of breastfeeding and maybe some of the difficulties that new moms can go through with when they start breastfeeding. I think many moms think, well, you know, it's natural. People have done it for years and years. It's going to be easy. I'm going to put my baby there and it's all going to happen. But sometimes that has a little bit of technique and a little bit of patience involved. And if you don't realize that going in and it's not happening, many ladies express a feeling of failure or I'm not doing it right or how can I be such a bad mom because it's not working out for me. But really, those are all things that are very normal and common, and it's nice to be in a class where you can hear that and know what to expect when it comes. We also have some classes, like I mentioned a little earlier, pediatrician question-answer sessions where you can, you know, ask a pediatrician all your questions or doubts. We have infant CPR classes, so when you go home with your baby, you can, you know, if in a case of an emergency, you know how to respond immediately. Are you offering the whole prenatal?
Right. We do give the entire prenatal class, yes, which is going to be what to expect from the minute you walk in the hospital through your labor. And so, again, questions and answers by an educator, specifically in women's, to pretty much give you the idea of what will happen when you go through. And we also encourage the siblings class. If you have siblings at home, you also want to make sure that they, you know, they can participate and they know what to expect and you know how to introduce, obviously, a new baby, you know, to the home. As maybe as easy as that may sound, but again, you're introducing it to a sibling, so it might be just a bit different for them.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because sometimes I've heard stories where, you know, the sibling, the baby comes home, and then after a while the fascination wears off, and the brother or sister may say, okay, you can take him back or whatever.
Right, right.
Yes, that's right.
Definitely. You know, that and then you hear other stories as well. I mean, you know, the ones where they're saying, well, that baby's getting more attention, and then, you know, feelings of
jealousy, abandonment, mm-hmm. You know.
And so that class is, again, designed just to help you introduce, you know, the baby to the home as well as, you know, the family in general.
I think the days are gone when you would see the picture of, you know, dad walking up and down the halls smoking a cigarette or yeah, whatever, being nervous.
Most
because
definitely.
Now they're available. They're allowed to be there when the baby is born. So tell us about, you know, the information and the education and programs you have for the dads.
Well, they're definitely encouraged to go to these prenatal classes as well. We encourage them to attend, again, as that support system and as, you know, potentially first-time parents because they're going to get a lot of information that's, you know, definitely necessary for the next 18 years, if you will. And so it's important for them to attend as well.
I think a lot of times husbands or, you know, new dads, they feel excluded, especially during the pregnancy. They don't feel anything. They feel fine. Their tummy's not growing. You know, they feel like they're not part of it. And, you know, we want, especially when they come into our facilities, we want them to be as included as possible. They're definitely encouraged to stay during the delivery, to be there for their significant other, to hold the baby, to talk to the baby, to be there as much as possible. so that they can, you know, start bonding as a family.
And what about, sometimes we have the instances where we have young mothers and in some instances also where there's a big gap between children as big as 10 years or more. And sometimes that takes an adjustment as well. So what do you recommend, or what are some of the things that you all have dealt with as far as issues? Has anybody come to you asking for some kind of help that perhaps wasn't dealt with?
We do. We have those age gaps. That's definitely something that we've seen. We're pretty much going to treat everyone just the same as we would. And so whether it's somebody who is older in age or somebody, you know, a teenager, we want to make sure that we're providing the same education. Will we definitely provide more education potentially to the teenager who may need it? Absolutely. We do want to offer that specifically, identify any needs that they may need prior to going home. So if they didn't have that support system at home as well, but we're going to do what we can within the facilities to make sure that they have what they need prior to going home.
And a lot of times, sometimes they may not have the mom, the aunt, sister available. And the fact that there are programs with, you ladies available, not trying to sound sexist or anything, but the fact that sometimes they may feel more comfortable talking to another woman and or someone who is their age or offering some kind of encouragement.
Definitely. And even after they go home, we have our lactation educators that are always available to make, like, special appointments if they're having trouble breastfeeding or if they feel like they're not, maybe getting that baby enough to eat, that we can assess the situation and they can come in on an outpatient basis and kind of just make a small appointment and see our consultant, and that those services are always available as well. So.
And sometimes I would mention dads earlier, and I think dads, sometimes some of us, we see something and we're going, is something wrong? Or if it's the first child, there may be questions about. So, gosh, I hate to be calling you again, Sonia, but is this supposed to happen or,
Absolutely. We welcome those questions. We'd rather you call and get those questions answered at any of our facilities. Of course, I'm sure your pediatrician is one who would want to be called if there was a type of concern. But to Sandra's point, those outpatient appointments are available just for those assessments to make sure that everything is where it needs to be and baby's doing well and gaining weight and growing and getting enough to eat. So, again, we encourage those questions to come through. No question is a dumb question, or I should say an unasked question is not good. So we want those questions to come through.
And the vaccination, the immunization that you're talking about, hepatitis B, as far as when people might be concerned a little bit about what are some of the reactions or side effects that the baby may have, or as you mentioned earlier, a follow-up with a different series. What information can you give us about that?
The series is three vaccinations. One of them is at birth, and usually the next one 2 months and then 6 months. Usually those follow-ups are with their pediatrician's office, or if they go to like a family clinic, they can get those done there as well. So that's information that we want to give because we want to make sure that they get those follow-ups and not just the one that we're giving at the hospital and for them to have the misconception that that's it, I'm done, I'm protected. We also give them, all sorts of information about what can occur or side effects, maybe allergic reactions, maybe even just at the site of injection, it might have a little bit of a reaction, soreness, that kind of thing. And we try to be as thorough as possible so that they understand.
And perhaps the most common would probably be a reaction, like an irritation or something like that.
That's the most common. And of course, a little soreness. Anytime we get poked with anything, it hurts. So we just try to give them a heads up about that. And as long as they understand and we understand that they understand, we have to make sure that they do understand all the information before we give it. And then we go ahead.
The fact that you said, and I'm glad that you've mentioned this several times, understand that they understand, because sometimes they don't understand and you think they understand and that you know, we're using the word understand so many times, but sometimes because of the stress or because of the fact that they just want to make sure that everything's okay, they may or may not comprehend what you're saying.
Many times we have patients that just shake their heads, and we never want to assume that they understand. So we always have to make sure, you know, why don't you tell me what I told you, or why don't you explain it to me now? It's a form of teach back so that we know and we're not just assuming that they understood the facts.
And is this given right at birth, right soon after birth?
Soon after, not right at the delivery, but, you know, maybe a couple of hours after.
Right. The consent and the information for the hepatitis is actually given prior to mom delivering, so they're not feeling as overwhelmed at the moment, and so you're able to explain to them what the vaccine is about, and you're able to get consent from them to determine whether they want to give it or not. Again, most do. Very, very, very rare circumstances do they not. But then we're fortunate enough to reiterate their information at discharge. So our facilities have a discharge class, and again, that's where you get that education to understand if they understand. And you go through scenarios, and you ask questions, and then you ask them to ask you. And so there's multiple things that go into this discharge class to make sure that they understand.
And the discharge class is part of prenatal or after they're in the hospital?
This is during the hospital stay. This is right before you go home. So we capture those patients, again, that don't know or may thought they have known. So, you know, some patients come in and it's their second, third, or fourth, and there's new literature that's come out on how to do things different. And so that's an opportunity for us to give them some feedback and teach them some of the new, guidelines that are out.
And perhaps there's also something that the mother or the father forgot. And they said, oh, I had a question about this. What's happening? What do I need to do?
Right. Into your 10-year gap, I mean, that's a significant amount of time to say, I forgot what to do when this happens. So that discharge class, again, and teaching throughout, because as we say, when you enter a hospital, your discharge teaching starts when you enter the hospital, because we want to ensure that education is taking place the moment that you walk in to the minute you walk out the door.
You have mentioned already about postnatal classes, prenatal classes, everything that happens. But there may be some people who still want to find out more information on their own, and again, because of social media. So what would you recommend as far as going Facebook page, other sites that you would like for them to go to?
For information on their baby or about their pregnancy, you know, first and foremost, their physician. They can always call us. But in terms of online, I would stay with maybe .org sites, okay, where the information is valid and it's there. Maybe American Academy of Pediatrics. There's vaccine info. What is the site?
www.vaccineinformation.org gives parents a lot of information about vaccines. And then, of course, the Hospitals of Providence has a Facebook page as well, as does each of our sites. So if you log on as well, you can see any of the three hospitals, Memorial, Sierra, and East Campus. And we're all going to have information on our mother-baby units.
Thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Sandra Olivas and Sonia Lopez with the mother-baby unit at the Hospitals of Providence. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producers are Lauren Terrazas and Eddie Rosales. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.